I believe on the other end of the phone, I have a guy by the name of Doug Bowles, president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Fitting, considering this is our Week in IndyCar guest episode brought to us by Cooper Tires, the Justice Brothers, and TorontoMotorsports.com. How are you this fine Thursday, Mr. Bowles?
I'm hanging in there. Yeah, we're got the vax clinic started again at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, so we're excited to be getting some of our Hoosiers vaccinated and getting them ready for May and continuing the countdown to the 105th running of the 500.
Well, I know you might be surprised to learn this. A lot of our listeners, a lot of questions, want to know a lot about the Indy 500, so I know you probably can't answer everything. Not everything's been announced and formalized, but as always, you are very generous with us and trying to be a really great source of insight whenever you can join us. So why don't we just kick things off and do that with our pal, a Hoosier himself. He and his wife, Jeremiah Morrell, says, when should we expect, Doug, a full month of May calendar? Fan attendance numbers, details on garage area bronze badge access. He's got about 19 more questions here, kind of sort of speaking for the fans. So why don't we just start with the first couple and I'll roll in a few more. So calendar, is there a limit to fans number, you think? And we certainly got a lot of folks curious about badges and access.
No, I definitely hear him. And, one of the things, I think you know this, I call customers every night on my way home and don't block my cell phone number. So the number of text messages that I'm getting a day right now from numbers that I don't recognize asking the same thing. So I definitely hear the fans and know how important it is to try and get some answers. Unfortunately, we're like everyone else, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we want to host the Indy 500 with as many fans as possible inside the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But what's really going to drive that is once we know what the protocols are, not just in the state of Indiana, but more specifically really in the city of Indianapolis. And at this point in time, we haven't really been given any direction on that. So we basically have planned out a variety of scenarios from everybody and their brother that wants to come all the way down to different percentages and different ways of seating. But our focus is letting this go as long as we can and the numbers get as much better as they can and we get as many people vaccinated as we can so we can have as many people as possible at the 500. So I would say we're going to know something here in the next 15 to 20 days at the latest.
Gotcha. So that's going to take a little bit longer on that end. How about on the badge access, garages, bronzes, and whatnot? Is that an area you've been able to finalize anything?
No, because it's really the same situation. Well, it's a little more complicated. It's the same situation in that we don't know how we're going to be limited by numbers of people at the facility. But more importantly, IndyCar wants to make sure that they keep their garage area and participants safe. We got to figure that out as well. So I believe at the beginning of the IndyCar season anyway, it's going to be almost essential personnel only again. So again, it's going to be 15 to 20 days before we know exactly what that's going to look like as well. I wish I could give answers. And I know people think, oh, they must know. But honestly, we don't know yet. And I'm afraid to speculate too much because then, I mean, as everybody knows, it changes every week, the numbers and what the protocols are that communities are facing. So we're just trying to ride this thing out.
Maybe add to that just a little bit, Doug. I've heard, and I don't know if this is accurate, but I've heard that beyond just looking to state and local guidelines or decisions when it comes to COVID and whatnot, you and the Penske Entertainment Group are also really paying a lot of attention and pretty strict adherence to what the CDC is saying as well. Is that also factoring into monitoring what's happening on a daily basis and trying to find the right time to say yes, no, how many, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, we've been paying attention to CDC as well as the locals. But honestly, I think the most important piece for us is going to be what is the governor from a statewide perspective require, and then specifically where are we with regards to the state of or the city of Indianapolis. So that the state is lifting its mask mandate, I think, on April 6th, and the city has announced that they're going to at least keep theirs for a little bit longer. So that's part of it. The numbers are, in the community are going up a little bit, but hospitalizations seem to be stable. So there's generally a lot of good news. And we're just really trying to pay attention to the state and the local piece almost more than CDC at this point in time.
10-4. Let's see. I'm trying to look through the other things. We've got a lot of great folk, Ron Terpstra, Indy Nathan, Jamie Rowe, Chris Hoffman, all asking somewhat similar things. Jeremiah has one or two others. Any insights on whether we might get to hear some bands? And on a very personal front, tell me about the memorabilia show, Doug. I might not come out if there's no memorabilia show.
So on bands, obviously music is really important to Carb Day for sure, if you think about that piece. So we're doing everything we can to figure out how to have music as some component of Carb Day. And then, you know, obviously the snake pit's a pretty big thing related to younger folks. So hopefully there will be some music component as it relates to the month of May. But our challenge and the most important thing for us is getting the race in. And if at some point in time we have to modify or even eliminate something in order to get everybody comfortable with the Indy 500, we definitely would do that. But right now we're still planning on some level of music because I think it's part of the overall experience as we go forward. Now the memorabilia show, you and I are both the same. I mean, it is a pretty important piece, and it's one of the things that, you know, makes the 500 so special is the fact that there's just so much cool stuff over the years that people have collected, and it's much as fun just to walk through there and see what people have. So again, that I think would be dictated by what protocols we have, because they put that in the pavilion. So depending on what kind of percentage of people and the spacing that the city might require, you know, could modify that a little bit. But right now the plan would be to host it. So we'll just keep our fingers crossed on that one as well.
Indy 500, here I come. Let's see. Let's go to our pal Jameen Tuttle. Says, Doug, I know most people are focused on the 500, but how are things looking for the GMR Grand Prix? He says, we've got our general admission tickets ordered. Can't wait to spend 2 days on the viewing mounds, turns 7 through 9. Curious if you think they might be open. Again, I know I'm lobbing a lot of things at you that you might not be able to answer, but we'll try.
No, I know. I feel like I keep giving the same answer. First of all, just to reiterate, we won't have people there. And part of the experience in the IndyCar Grand Prix, and frankly, the part I think is the best experience of the IndyCar Grand Prix, is the infield portion and sitting on the spectator mounds. And last year, really disappointed because when we put the big video board on the back of the pagoda, we actually took the two video boards down that were there. We repurposed one of them. Roger had us put one of them on the backside of turn one. So as you walk in the gate there, there's video for the plaza people, you know, when they're not sitting in the seats. The other one we actually put up permanently so that when you're sitting on those spectator mounds at 7 and 8, you can see that video board. So I want to get out there so people can actually sit on the spectator mound, watch the racing, and they'll have their own purpose-built video board there for them to help enjoy the action on track. In the past few years, we've rented and put in some smaller ones that haven't been terribly effective, and where we put this one, we're really excited about. So again, hopeful. The challenge with the IndyCar Grand Prix is just at the beginning of May versus the end of May or the middle of May. We're hopeful, and more importantly for me is I want to get out there on turn 7 and see how that video board works for the fans to enjoy the race itself.
10-4. Jordan Darwin raises the dreaded question. Says he's really excited to hopefully come back to the 500 this year. Said, but he has seen some reports of COVID spiking in some areas in Indiana. Says, is there a drop dead date on if and when the race might be postponed or might be confirmed to go ahead as scheduled on the 30th of May? So are we past the postponement conversation yet? Hopefully.
I guess you never say never, but our intention all along, and Roger's never wavered, is that we're going to have the Indy 500 on May 30th with some level of fans. I mean, that's really his focus. I would just, this is just me not thinking. I mean, every day that goes by that we haven't adjusted the date would make it that much harder, just because, you know, you got to find TV windows, you got to fit it in with all the other stuff that's going on in terms of the series. Likely, you know, later in the year, things are better anyway. So it's harder to fit in. So I would say we've passed the date at which the race would be rescheduled somewhere else.
Amen. Picking up on something you mentioned at the outset here, Kenny C. sends in a question. Says, my wife and I will be fortunate enough to be fully vaccinated before race day, but we will still wear our masks. He asks, what measures will you have in place to ensure that fans will be as safe as possible? And will masks be required to enter? I love that question, Doug, because it's one that, if I'm thinking in a bigger picture, hey, Indy 500, biggest sporting event in the world when everything is, you know, normal. If we're going to have people, probably going to be a decent number of people. Is there thoughts to applying safety layers and measures, even if, say, the state no longer calls for masks being mandatory, et cetera?
Well, I think we're pretty certain, unless there's spikes, that the state isn't going to require masks, because they've said they're going to lift that mask mandate on April 6th. We also know that they're going to let the local officials determine what they want to do in their own community. So that would be Indianapolis. But I would suspect, and again, this is all subject to change, but I would suspect that regardless of where we are on May 30th, we are probably going to require masks. I just think even if Indiana was in a completely different spot than others, we're an international event. We're a global event. I really don't see how we would have it without requiring masks. Although, again, I'm just speculating, there may be a way that we would say that it's strongly recommended. But right now, I think if you're thinking about coming to the 500, you ought to be getting in the mindset of thinking that if I'm going to be there, I'm probably going to need to wear a mask.
Yeah, I think the thing that comes to mind for me more than anything on the specific topic of masks is we don't want to spoil the party for ourselves. The last thing we want to hear about is some form of outbreak at the event, which would then potentially cause the party. Granted, I doubt it would stop before race day, but just in general, the last thing any sporting league, stick and ball, motor racing, whatever, wants is to say, hey, we let folks in, we let things go pretty wild back to normal, and we had some sort of spike or main issue, and now we probably have to heavily modify what we do, and it feels like this damn pandemic is never going away. So I think that was my main mindset. Not that I want everybody to have to wear masks, but we just don't want to hear bad news coming out of the 500 for sure. Let's see. Corey Trojanowski says, with Indianapolis currently hosting the NCAA men's basketball tournament, what might IMS look to learn from government, hospitality, and health officials as you prepare to host fans again this year?
Well, I think that's the biggest thing for the city right now is they're going through this process and seeing how the Final Four is. And I think once they want to get through that and evaluate what was there. So I certainly think there are going to be learnings from the event that the city will be interested in having those conversations with us once they get through the Final Four next week. So I don't know specifically what we're going to learn, but definitely we're going to learn something from it.
Bounce around a little bit here, Doug, and I know you've got a flight coming up not too far away. So let's just go silly. So that crazy stepson of yours, that crazy kid by the name of Connor Daly, when he was on the show last week or the week before, we're coming up with Indy 500 entry ideas or entrance ideas on the stage, and his idea was riding a bison to the driver introductions. This is brought back up to us by our pal Lance Snyder. He says, what do you think? Can we maybe have each driver representing an animal and bringing an animal with them to the infield? Can we set up an IMS petting zoo? Oh, man, Connor, you're cracking open some problems here.
You know, I'm a promoter, so I love it when drivers sort of think outside the box with the kind of crazy idea that gets a little traction. And obviously that post got Dale Earnhardt Jr. fired up about it. And he weighed in on why it was a bad idea. And, you know, probably not going to have animals, but I love the fact that you got drivers that are out there always talking about fun ways to make that entry a little bit special. And Connor certainly certainly out there about as far as you can get.
I love it when you got to look at the kid you help raise and say, oh man, we got to wrangle this one here. Forget wrangling the bison. We might have to lasso that daily kid. Here's
you
one.
You know, but one of the things I love about our IndyCar Series drivers is they get the importance of the corporate side. They get the importance of how, you know, you got to represent your sponsors, but they also really are okay with their own personality, and that fits his personality. And I'm, you know, you really want that out of the drivers. So I Simon Pagenaud's done a great job of showing his personality. James, we've got some great personalities that aren't just corporate spokespeople, and they're not afraid to be a little goofy, especially Connor's able to really, really step out on the edge a bit.
That I cannot argue with at all. Here's one that comes up on an annual basis on race day. Topic of releasing balloons. And anytime I've shared a start shot or something prior to the start, whatever it might be with balloons, there's always a couple of people on social media that eviscerate me and others for this tradition, for the negative environmental impact. Can't really argue with them. John Hollinger asks, any thoughts on whether this tradition of releasing tons of balloons into the air might be replaced by maybe a hat tip going back to the original hot air balloon stuff that took place prior to the Indy 500. Any thoughts on this tradition and whether it's something that maybe needs to be modified in a little bit more of a ecologically friendly direction?
Well, you're not the only one that hears from folks when we talk about the balloon launch. I mean, we definitely hear it at our place, and that there is, you know, it is obviously deeply rooted in Tony Hallman and the Indianapolis 500 post World War II, and it's something that a lot of our fans expect us to do. It's also something that we have over the last few years in particular really evaluated more, and we've done some of our own studies and started to work with folks, and I can tell you that sustainability and sort of some corporate responsibility pieces are, you know, more and more in the forefront at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and it's definitely something that we have a lot more conversation about internally. We didn't launch balloons last year. There were no fans there, so we felt like that was probably an appropriate thing to do. And you know, I don't know that a final decision has been made on what happens with balloons long term, but I guess the easiest way to put it is it's definitely something we understand. We hear both sides of the argument. Both are have some valid concerns, and you know, I think the biggest challenge would be, if we decided to not have them, what would we do to replace it? And like I said, those conversations just continue to happen internally, and we'll just keep people posted if something does change.
10-4. Last couple here for you, Doug. Nathan DeRover sends in something cool. Says, I moved to Indiana a couple years ago, and I've noticed that the Speedway is a lot more involved with the local community than I knew or expected. It says, from being a COVID vaccine site to the Christmas lights to dinner en blanc, he says there are a lot of non-racing events at the Speedway. Is this a newish trend, or has this been happening all along and I just didn't hear about it until I moved into the market? He says, I think it's great that the Speedway is such an integral part of the culture.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest things that we've really focused on is how do we, you know, how do we be part of the community in a day and age when being part of the community isn't just about the racing, right? It was really about how could we make sure people knew that we were corporate partners and residents alongside them. So that's, you know, this, you know, we had a police officer's funeral. We had a high school graduation. We've had toy drives. We've had food drives, obviously the vaccine stuff. So for us, it's really, our mentality, it's Roger Penske's mentality and heart, is how do you be more than just a facility that's at 16th and Georgetown? How do you really help the community be a better community? And that means you got to do things besides just host a race and sell tickets. And this is something I think you'll see, even in a year where we can have 300,000 plus people in the 500, you're still going to see the facility being used for the greater good of the city of Indianapolis, state of Indiana. And I think it's it's just a continuation of really who Roger is, and frankly, who the Hallman George family was ahead of Roger.
Two things to close here, Doug. First one from our pal Bodan Klemensky says, I've been enjoying the Behind the Bricks series on the IMS YouTube channel, but I feel not enough people have seen it. Can you maybe have it uploaded to the IndyCar channel, YouTube channel as well? Says it's the kind of content suitable for, is it the kind of content suitable to push out for the media and for the series to use for promotions right now?
Yeah, you know, it's a good point, and I'll talk to the team, and because I didn't realize that we weren't sharing it with the IndyCar folks. I've had a blast doing those. It's just been fun to talk to, you know, different personalities inside the sport. You know, obviously we, you know, Bob Jenkins dealing with his glioblastoma cancer, and just the response we had there was fantastic. Started out with Donald Davidson. We've had some great conversations on the Behind the Bricks, and the idea behind it really was to give people an opportunity to learn about somebody more than, you know, just kind of what they've seen either when they're driving a car or, you know, like a Kara Adams, for example. Obviously some people that really follow sport know who she is, but to really understand what she does, how she fell in love with the sport. And so it's been a lot of fun to do those, and we're going to continue to do them, and I'll check in with the IndyCar folks and help remind them that we're out promoting them as well. I'll be happy to have them stick that up on their channels.
Last thing here to close the show, Doug, going to pivot a little bit off what Jonathan Meckley sent in, asking about whether some of those who are calling for IndyCar and the Indy 500 to become all electric, whether that might be something that interests you. Would rather touch on the Indy Autonomous Challenge and what is coming to the Speedway there. You know me, the tech guy, the engineering guy, I'm all about the machines as well as the drivers and tradition. This has stood out, Doug, as a real throwback or celebration of the original inspiration for the Indianapolis 500. Test, develop, innovate, go to new places, break barriers. You just share some insights here to close, Doug, on how the Indy Autonomous Challenge planning is coming along and what yep. you were hoping it will have in terms of an effect on the reputation of the Speedway, how it's held within the automotive industry as it once was, as a test bed for innovation and development. And there's big potential here, but share some thoughts from the boss.
Well, you introduced it exactly why we did it. A few years ago, we started thinking about how do we get to a point where we truly are a facility that is testing the new technology in transportation. That's why the Speedway was built. It is the biggest piece of our DNA. And obviously there are things that we learn from IndyCar racing and from NASCAR racing that applies to some of the things that the OEMs are doing. There's a lot of safety things that have come out of the Speedway, but it wasn't quite exactly right in the wheelhouse of what Carl Fisher was trying to do for all the people that were building cars in the early 1900s. So we originally started out thinking that this idea would be around electric. And the more we started talking to folks, the more we realized we couldn't come up with a platform that everybody could wrap their arms around related to electric, because there were so many different ways to go about it, or alternative fuel. You know, if you start thinking about hydrogen and some of the other ways to power vehicles. So we started talking around. We worked with this group called ESN, Energy System Network, here in Indiana, a bunch of business leaders in Indiana, Eli Lilly and others, and decided the best place for us to focus was the technology. So give all these schools the same platform, an Indy Lights car with all the same sensors, all the same hardware, and say, go take your best and brightest minds, and here's the hardware that everybody gets the same. You guys put the brains to it. Teach this car how to drive, not just around the racetrack at 150 to 180 miles an hour, but how to do it at 150 to 80 miles an hour with 30 other cars doing the same thing. So we're pretty excited about the technology, and this isn't about replacing race car drivers. This is about technology that's going to help us in terms of our transportation that we see every day going forward. It's about giving some of these best and brightest minds something to help launch the autonomous vehicle to the next level. And certainly we believe there's some things that you might learn on these cars. Sensors, for example, that can almost act like spotters for the drivers in the car. So I'm really excited about the overall program. More than anything, I think I'm excited about the 11 countries and the four continents and the 14 states of schools that are represented here in the best and brightest minds of young people who are going to look back at someday in their career in the automotive side or in the autonomous side, and they're going to say, you know, I started it at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, just like the DARPA Challenge did several years ago to really get the autonomous vehicle really moving forward. So we're excited about it. Firestone's a partner. They're really excited about it. NTT's involved. So we've got some of the people involved in IndyCar that are involved in it as well. So hopefully our fans hear us and they know we're not trying to get rid of the race car driver, but what we're trying to do is just prove to folks that places like the Indianapolis Motor Speedway can really make a big difference to the cars that we'll see driving in the future.
Doug, thanks as always, taking some time here. And I do genuinely look forward to seeing you for the first time in a long time in May.
All right. I appreciate it, Marshall. Thanks for keeping all our fans informed, and thanks for all your hard work.